Welcome to Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. We're happy to take your calls on food, wine, and related topics and stories and recipes. Give us a ring, 410-662-8780. That's 410-662-8780. Or email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. And
it was a fun morning, Tony.
That's because usually you're snoozing when I go to market in the morning.
I know. All these years you go to market and take good care of all the restaurants, and I don't go. I just make the food at some of them. And, gosh, it was so much fun to go this morning. I woke up early, and I'm like, and thought, gosh, I don't want to miss it again, and texted you to see if you thought it was worthwhile.
Half the fun is to leave surprises for you and for some of the guys.
Oh, my gosh, it's a treat. It's always fun to walk in on Monday morning and see what's in there. Or get a text from you about what you brought. But, yeah, it was great to be there. We were there, at 6:15? So no one's there at that time except for the farmers, which is great. For us, because you buy so much product, you're using what are those things called? The wheel.
Hand trucks. It's one of the new inventions from the last couple of years.
You're using a hand truck and you're buying, 18 boxes of this and that. And it's, if there were a lot of people there, it would be a big problem. So, and I remember you used to go later. Because there was a time when I went a little bit more often many years ago. No, I thought you used to go a little bit later.
No, I'm going a little bit later.
Oh, you were going
it
earlier.
It used to be 5:45.
Okay, got it. Okay, so.
But now I, now I'm old and I tend to sleep in.
Can we just say it's fall?
No.
But anyway.
Actually, hotter it is, the earlier it is.
Oh my gosh, it was so much fun. I mean, it was just great to see the farmers who we've been buying from, or you've been buying from for many, many years. And Werner, seeing Doug Werner and all of his amazing fruit products with the different types of apples.
That's for sure. I mean, there are all kinds of people there. We have some folks we've dealt with for a long time, and you get fussy. I mean, I get fussy about.
As you should be.
Product. I mean, and people are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the things that my great grandmother taught me. Shopping for produce when I was a little boy, I would watch her, and she would smell things and pick things up and ask questions about it. And, and she wasn't hard on the person, but I mean, she was a country person and she knew some things and she wanted answers.
She probably wanted her money to go as far as it could too.
Well, yeah, so, she'd only buy eggplants.
Just smart,
And there are still eggplants because the season's so unusual and long, and it's been dry for a little bit now, which they could use a little rain, but it's part of what's made the season special is to get everything just about ripe and then let it stay kind of sunny and dry and cool nights. And I mean, if this was this is a wine producing region, and it will make for a good vintage for red wines for sure.
Okay.
But if it was a major place, if this was Bordeaux. And the people would be going bananas about the vintage conditions because, the Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot already would have been harvested by now. Cabernet Sauvignon often historically is harvested into the first week of October, and to be dry this long, to have some of those warm days.
So you don't have to worry about rot with grapes. Well,
what it is? It's funny because the one fellow who always helps me, Kiefer, I made him taste Concord grapes every week that they've come, right?
Yeah.
And the first week,
he
tasted them. He's like, I made him. Yeah.
I'll do it.
Yeah, he's like 6 o'clock in the morning, poor guy. He was, cooking last night and sleepy. And I'm like, stick this in your mouth. he tasted the first one. Like, that's sweet. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next week, he tasted it. I'm like, now, feel the skin this time. Skin is thicker. The skin is not as bitter. And then the third week, now the skin is much thicker. The skin is sweet.
Mm.
And bite on one of the seeds. Seeds are not green now.
Ah.
Now, if it was a wine grape, you'd be harvesting it.
Oh, cool.
Not that I'm advocating Concord grape wine, but it's the same thing that happens with wine grapes. So
interesting.
It's nice to actually be able to, because I don't get to go at harvest time into a bunch of different wine regions and drag one of our talented, poor young cooks out onto the field at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning and make them taste stuff. But
that works. That's a good way to learn. Yeah, it was fun. You know, we saw all kinds of pumpkins, and there were beautiful eggplants, and all the different types of apples, and there were still tomatoes, and which is amazing.
A year like this, because things are planted on a normal schedule, but you've had not really Indian summer. You just had longer summer. So you have a really nice collision of a lot of summer and autumn product. You know, so
yeah, I'm surprised to see watermelons.
But from the Eastern Shore, especially Lower Eastern Shore, they've not lost their heat. And
it makes sense if they planted.
And the melons that are there are small and ripe and pretty dense, you know, because of the drier conditions.
Okay.
So they're actually
really good.
Pretty darn nice.
Yeah. I mean, definitely go, especially, I mean, yeah. I mean, it's just amazing. When does market end? It ends at noon? Or is it later than that?
Noontime downtown. But all the markets should
have
interesting
then,
product.
Because it can't be that different next Sunday.
No.
And when we got chestnuts, which there weren't very many of those, but I mean, I'm super excited to have gotten chestnuts from that lady. And it's also fun to watch you, after all these years, your rapport with people, and it's a little bit like family for you, I think. And that's just really nice to see.
But it is.
I appreciate the relationship.
They provide all the product that makes things special.
That's why when they thanked me, I'm like, oh my gosh, thank you. I mean, that's what gives me, I mean, they bring me great joy. That working with beautiful, incredibly fresh, gorgeous product is amazing. I mean, 20 years ago, if you bought a zucchini at a store, you just had no idea how old it was. I mean, now I can go. You go to market and bring me zucchini off the plant.
Scratch the skin and look at the stems.
Exactly. I mean, things have changed so much. And I mean, also when we moved here 25 years ago, and you grew up here, so you'd been here before that, but for me, I had not. And to see how market has changed over the last 25 years, because not too many people were going 25 years ago to that market.
In some ways there was less of a crowd. But more food was bought. One of the things about generational change has been that the older generation that has that now honestly is sort of aged out of going to markets. They don't cook as the replacement generation does not cook as much. They don't cook the volume,
and they cook differently.
And thank God they come out to restaurants. But they don't cook the volume that. I mean, it was very normal for me to run into a bunch of Italian immigrants who were buying, you know, 5 cases of tomatoes for home to make sauce.
Right. Sure.
That not everybody does that now. Yeah. You'll see a lot more. You'll see more people in smaller purchases.
Interesting. So the farmers have adapted to that, and
and
the market has adapted
to that. And they've continued to grow more heirloom and broader product. And sometimes I think some of the folks that I ask about stuff, well, they'll try it and they'll plant it.
I thank you for that, because I remember the first time you came in with fava beans, and I'm like, I can't believe I'm getting fresh fava beans. And I know it's because you talked to the farmer the year before and said, we'd really like to have some fava beans. I also remember the first time you came in with squash blossoms.
I was like, I'll give you $50, buy some seeds.
Right? There you go. And I remember the first time you came with squash blossoms, you're like, they're free. I'm like, what? What do you mean they're free? And of course, they're not now, but
like
in the beginning.
Or the pea vines, too.
Yeah, no one knew that they were,
I'm like, do you have the vines? It's like, yeah.
What about them?
Yeah, bring them out back. I'm like, could you just bring me a big trash bag full of them?
That's so great. And it's good for them. I mean, now they have product that they didn't realize could be sold and whatever. I mean, it's good for everybody. And I'm not saying you're responsible for everything, but I am thankful for the things that have become available to us. I encourage you to go to market before it's over. That's all I can say, because it's fun and it feels like a part of the city. I mean, you can see the city buildings.
Well, you see everybody. You see multiple generations.
Exactly.
You see ethnicities and orientations, and that's because food is the commonality, right? You know, and when you share food that you grew up with someone who grew up differently, that culture is open two ways. That's a cool thing.
It is.
I need to clarify one thing I said about pea vines.
Okay.
Don't eat the vines. It's the leaves on the vines that you want.
Okay, there you go.
The little shoots and the tendrils.
Don't go eating the root system.
Right. You chew on the vines all you want. Metamucil replacement.
And it was fun. I was talking to a man and his mom, and she was talking about She was asking about, you know, what vegetables she should get because she had a health problem. And I was thinking about that. I mean, that's something that a nutritionist is someone that's going to give you categories of things that you need to avoid and things that you need to help your health problems. I was thinking, you know, maybe people could send emails about, you know, I mean, we're not going to tell you what to do for your particular health problem, but certainly if
we
you've
are
been,
not qualified.
We're not anywhere near qualified anywhere. Yeah, but anyway, but
if you're trying to eat more spinach because your doctor said eat more dark green vegetables,
don't hate it. Yeah, yeah. So I mean, if you do have, it might be fun to hear. You know,
you can email a call about that, or just call about. I got this thing at market. What do I do with it?
Exactly.
Or when does this come in season? Because it's my favorite thing, and I want to go find it.
Right.
Does anyone grow it in this area?
And I just would like to say, for those of you that follow the show, that I saw a pawpaw today at market, and I was given one.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to open it. I didn't open it yet.
You may be underwhelmed, but we'll see.
Oh.
you have to wait until it looks pretty, like, dingy.
All right.
You know, like,
I had some beautiful flowers. And that was from Aliza, who we talked to last week on the show.
Yeah.
And that was fun. It was nice to get to see her.
Yeah, their ginger is spectacular.
Oh, my gosh. I have never seen ginger. I mean, any ginger we get in the restaurant does not look like that. It must be it's right out of the ground.
Yes.
It still keeps the
color.
Oh my gosh.
It doesn't harden quite all the way when you first pull, and it's pulling the entire plant. They're not just, you know, digging pieces and cutting it off, and then they dry them and put them in cold storage. No.
Oh my gosh. It was golden and reddish and rust. And I mean, I went back and bought more of that. Real camera with me.
We're going to make a la bomba rice with lamb confit, ginger, lots of garlic, and some of those lemon chilies.
At your house or at one of the restaurants?
No, one of the restaurants.
Oh, yeah. Good. Sounds so good.
That's my daughters don't want to eat the chilies.
So la bomba, ginger.
That fresh ginger, lamb confit, garlic, and some of those lemon chilies, those little tiny yellow chilies.
Oh, my gosh.
Chilies. So they're almost fruity.
Your car smelled like you couldn't have packed your car. I mean,
no,
I've never
full
seen
of
anybody
sweet peppers.
Put, yeah, those peppers, that's another thing look for when you go to market are these sweet peppers. They're little and they're all different colors and they're gorgeous. And, oh, my gosh, your car smelled so good because of that. I mean, it was.
It is always kind of like a wake up gift, you know. You get everything packed in there, and you're tired.
I can't believe how much.
And the doors are closed, and you're either like the car. 16 crates of apples in there, so it smells like that, or you know, something along those lines.
Anyway, that was fun. Thanks for that. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah,
it was a good morning.
Come anytime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we're going to move from market to what in the heck we're going to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And what else we're cooking this time of the year. Remember, give us a ring. Tell us about the things you're looking for at market or something that you bought and you'd have no idea what in the heck to do with.
Or share what you like to do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, your ideas.
But it's 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. And at some point, I want to get to the best thing you ever ate because that's something we get asked all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today, and you can reach us 410-662-8780. We're talking about the market and the season.
Mm-hmm.
When we say market, I mean farmer's market, but I'm sure you find things at stands and whatnot around the area as well still. Or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. And let's bring on Mark in Baltimore. Mark, how are you?
Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Mark.
Hey.
You're on the air.
Hey, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me all right?
Yep, just great.
Cool. Yeah, I got a question about lamb. I went to this French restaurant up in Philadelphia, and they served this really tender lamb shank that was braised with, it was served with feta cheese, olives, and I think it was a sweet cherry demi-glaze.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really impressed by the dish, and I asked them, I'm like, hey, where does this lamb come from? Like, where can I get it, essentially? And they said it comes from Australia. So I'm thinking to myself, like, that's probably not doable. where can I get some good lamb to cook for my fiance at home?
I mean, you can get lamb from Australia and New Zealand. The Australian in particular right now is an excellent product. Sometimes it's a frozen product.
It's readily available, actually.
And you can ask a butcher for that. Domestic lamb is pretty spectacular.
Domestic lamb is the best lamb in the world. Our lamb is the best lamb in the world,
they're larger. I mean, that's the little tiny like appellations of lamb production, whether in Italy or France, like that's wonderful and easy to get, but like Cindy said, I mean, that ours has great flavor,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, it's produced in a lot of places in the country. There's a bunch of farmers in Delaware growing lamb,
mm-hmm.
Colorado growing lamb.
Yeah, so my dad was one of the first people to import lamb from New Zealand into the United States. That was in 1985, 86. So it really is very available. Oftentimes, Australian New Zealand lamb is a little bit less expensive than American lamb, or actually always, pretty much. You should be able to find it. And, now the thing is what you're looking for are lamb shanks, and that's a large piece of meat. It's something that has to be braised. A slow cook is the only way to cook it because it is a tough piece of meat. Because of what it is, you may have to ask your butcher to get it in for you. That would be the only thing I would say. And I think it would be very fun for you if you can afford to get American lamb. I would get in an American lamb shank one time and get a New Zealand or Australian lamb shank in another time and compare them yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Should I be keeping an eye out for specific breeds of lamb? I'm kind of like following different like breeders for domestic products.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, should I keep an eye out for specific breeds or
no.
Any kind of paint one for the other? Okay.
Yeah, I think that's probably not necessary.
The American shanks are the American lamb are a little bit bigger than you see from Australia and New Zealand typically. You'll see that with chops, you'd see that with a shank. If you're figuring out, like if you're doing lamb shank for six people, you probably need three shanks.
Okay.
Maybe four tops because there's plenty of meat. The things are gigantic.
Yeah, you've got a long braise time.
You need a lot of stock to braise it in.
Mm-hmm.
But it will have amazing flavor.
Like a big crock pot.
Yeah.
If you use just very simple chicken stock, it will become ridiculous lamb stock by the time you're done because there's a lot of jelly in the shanks.
Yeah, and the other thing, if you want just a simple recipe, mirepoix, carrot, celery, onion, lamb loves a little tomato product. It certainly likes red wine, and as Tony said, chicken and veal stock, chicken, whichever, or if you have lamb stock, just cover it and by probably a couple of inches. I worry a little bit about you. What did you just say? A crock pot? I wonder if that's big enough. I don't know.
Yeah, no.
I don't think
a big one.
Okay. All right. Well, if you can fit it in there, but I think I would just do it on the stove, the old-fashioned way. You do want to brown the shank. That's another thing why I don't think, I think you're going to end up making more work for yourself if you try to attempt to get it into a crock pot because you have to brown it first.
Yeah.
So you brown it on all sides and be careful when you're doing it because it's going to splatter and all that kind of good stuff. But yeah, brown it on all sides and deglaze that pan with red wine and stock and add your mirepoix and aromatics, bay leaf, thyme, peppercorn, and you're on your way.
That sounds really great. I wasn't super happy with any of the red wines that night, so I ended up with a Negroni, which paired pretty well with lamb. But what red wines would you guys recommend?
Oh, I mean, all kinds of stuff.
For cooking or eating?
Drinking,
I'm sorry.
Pairing with the finished dish.
Okay, all right.
I tend not to like something sweet with lamb, so I would, a sauce that doesn't have any sweetness to it. I mean, it really depends on price point as well as the seriousness of the crowd. Anything from Nebbiolo from Piemonte to Brolo or Barbaresco from same region, I like very much with lamb shank. There is a grape Aglianico, spelled like Aglianico, from the south of Italy, from either Tarazi or from further south in Campania. Those are big, rich, dark red wines that are great with lamb as well, and then Bordeaux. I mean, wines from Pauillac and the Northern Medoc are classics. They're just you get into pretty serious money at that point.
Oh man, that sounds great! All right, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, happy cooking, Mark. Thank you for calling in. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I haven't made lamb shank in a long time. That's
the vessel that neglected to say the vessel he really wants. He should look up Rondeau, you know, R-O-N-D-E-A-U,
mm-hmm.
Rondeau. Mm-hmm. Those are
talking
what
about
you
the
want.
Pot that yeah, he should cook
pot.
It in.
Big, it's heavy base.
Heavy base, double-sided, two handles, which helps you to move the product around when it's that heavy. You'd have to have a double-handled pan. And you want a heavy base, exactly. And preferably stainless steel.
I mean,
inside at least.
You could cut your money way down and just braise the lamb shoulder that you already cut in the cubes and
mm-hmm.
less time too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he wants to do the shank, so
oh yeah,
he
no,
do
of
it.
Course.
Yeah, great flavor, and like you said, the stock's going to be delicious. So
oh,
what's one of you're saying we want to talk about what's one of your best meals? What's one of yours, Tony?
Well, I mean, I say I talk about the Pretzov too often, so I, mean, mm-hmm. I can't talk about the tripe and tomato there. There's a restaurant that is gone. In
don't torture
in Piemonte.
Us.
No, but I mean, but you're asking, and honestly,
okay. It's a memory. That's okay.
And you've been to the restaurant. It's in Asti,
mm-hmm.
or was in Asti, for more than 40 years. It's called Gene Neuve.
I know.
G-E-N-E-R, second word, N-E-U-V. And that's sort of like slang for new generation, like the new guard.
Okay.
Think about it. It opened in 1969.
Ah, yes, that is a new generation.
Know?
Yeah, I get it.
And so there was a like, it was a restaurant that did Piemontese classics. You know, so carne cruda.
Oh, that was the best carne cruda I've ever had
in my
life.
You know, very simple. The white Oof. Truffles on it. Mm. You know, and a little bit of the fresh cheese from the region.
I swear,
on the plate.
I can taste that right now. That's you know, amazing how food memories
are. The little Ligurian olives that you often see
mm-hmm.
in that area, Tagliacci.
And the olive oil she used, oh yep. my goodness, on that carne crudo.
That's beautiful. But see, tripe leads me to tripe, and that's also a restaurant where they do tripe in the end of the summer in tomato sauce.
So in case you don't know what carne crudo is, it's hand-chopped
veal. It's for a steak tartare
veal.
Lover, right?
What?
Yeah, it's for a steak tartare lover.
Right. So it's hand-chopped veal that's raw. And typically, you know, the name talks about the fact that your knife needs to be, it's the point of the knife, it needs to be extremely sharp in order to properly, because you're cutting it, you're not actually like smashing it up. You know, you want to cut it into
yeah.
fine pieces. And that's what you love on your palate is the fact
yeah.
that the meat is actually basically diced very fine.
The Italian menu title for the item is always, the translates as veal cut with the point of a knife.
Mm-hmm.
That's the entire menu item, you know.
Right.
Obviously seasoned in the mode of the chef and the house and all this kind of business, but
mm-hmm.
cut with the point of a knife.
Right.
So exactly what you're saying.
And then it has, and hers had white truffles, which doesn't always, and incredible extra virgin olive oil. And if I remember correctly, it had Reggiano and salt. And pepper, probably, but maybe no Reggiano.
Robiola.
Okay. Oh,
little fresh
that's
robiola.
Right.
Because
there's
not that much fat to veal, so that little bit of extra creamy richness is fun on the plate. Let's go to Willis in Waverly.
Hi there, Chef and Tony.
Hey, it's good to hear your voice your emails.
You always email.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was on the road right now, so I figured I'd go ahead and call in.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
What's going on?
Love the show. I was at market yesterday in Waverly, naturally, and
I'm shocked.
And I saw so many cabbage. I mean, I bought red cabbage, some green. I don't even know all the varieties, but I really don't know what to do with cabbage other than making sauerkraut. Do you all have any recommendations?
Well, this season is a great invitation to making a fun slaw.
Mm-hmm.
There's sweet red peppers, sweet yellow peppers, all kinds of sweet peppers in the market. You can add a little bit of a spicy pepper to it. Green apple, granny's sweet red peppers.
Mm-hmm.
And cabbage, a little bit of carrot.
You can julienne the apple.
You know, that...
Mm-hmm.
Easy slaw. They're very easy to do. Like a rice wine vinegar is a great.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to put mayonnaise in your slaw.
No.
You know, but something like that, you can make a batch, keep in the fridge, and use it for a variety of either braised things or grilled things. you know, a sandwich. I mean, that's a very easy thing right now this time of the year.
But if you do want to do mayonnaise, I like to do fresh lemon juice, mayonnaise, whole grain mustard, fresh chives, salt and pepper. And we use a lot of Napa cabbage. I don't know if that's one of the things that you got or not, but you can certainly, yeah, you can certainly do this to any cabbage. And then again, just wash it really well. Just remember that there's going to be, I've seen, you know, flies in cabbage before. I mean, there's bugs in there. So Tony,
usually this program is so appetizing, although I'm the one talking about veal stomachs. Yeah.
And wash it well, julienne it, and then let it drain. And then make sure you let it drain really well, and then toss it with your mayonnaise. And one of the things that I kind of forgot was a thing until I ate something someone made the other day, and it had celery seed in it. And I love the idea of celery seed being in with particularly Napa cabbage. So that might be a fun little bit of something to add to it. But I like Tony's apple. I used to do a piece of pan-roasted salmon with Napa cabbage and julienne Granny Smith apple slaw. And that was really, you know, especially when you have a piece of fish like salmon that's so high in fat, it's really nice to have that crunchy, acidic accompaniment with it. It goes really beautifully together. So, and then the idea of wilting a little bit of, actually, we got mustard greens today at market. Tony found them, and he was talking about wilting them for foie gras. And I was thinking also, I think it would be fun to wilt some of your cabbage with a little bit of brown butter and some sort of acid lime juice or something, and serving it with a foie gras or a piece of fish or whatever, a piece of chicken even. So
The cabbage to watch out for, Willis, is the big Savoy cabbage. They're much larger. They'll come after the frost. They come towards the end of the season, like when you're on the road to Thanksgiving. And that's the holy grail of cabbage. Those guys are huge. You can stuff the entire cabbage, which is amazing, and roast that in the oven. Very old fashioned, you know, like the European country thing to do, or but that's stuff with sausage or sausage and rice, or, you know, that
I love the idea.
Bocuse has a recipe for that in his regional cookbook.
That is
fantastic, okay. And dead on.
Do you stuff the whole cabbage or do you stuff individual leaves? You stuff the entire cabbage.
use a few of the leaves from what you take from the inside. You use some of that for part of the stuffing. But I mean, that's with fresh sausage, pork sausage.
So you end up with a little bit of a cavity.
And pork liver.
Oh, yeah.
And plenty of garlic. And some of the you end up with a cavity in there. And then you close it back on itself and put that in a relatively slow oven, like a 300-degree oven.
But, Willis, you have a very good idea there. You could take large leaves of cabbage and roll it around something, like a piece of fish. Doing that with salmon would make that salmon super moist and tender, and it would steam itself inside. So you can use it that way as well. There's a lot of stuff you can do with cabbage.
Yeah, you probably never met people excited about cabbage like us.
No, this is great. Giving me a lot of inspiration here. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the call, Will. And Willis, and have a good Sunday.
Thank you so much. Great to hear you all.
Thank you.
See you, man.
That's cool. Good questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. And you were asking about best things you ever ate?
Mm-hmm.
Culatello. I'll give you one word. Culatello.
Okay. Can you give me some more words?
So do you like prosciutto?
Of course I do.
Would you like something that's much better than any prosciutto you've ever had?
Yes.
That's culatello.
Okay.
So culatello are these smaller, very specific cut pieces of pork or ham.
Mm-hmm. And it's Italian.
From one town.
Ooh.
One small.
What town?
DOC. Zibibbo?
Culatello.
I'm incorrect. It's not Zibibbo.
Sorry. Right. We'll get back to that. So tell us about
it. It'll take me a minute to get out of the file cabinet.
Okay.
but yeah, it's just spectacular. One of the restaurants I went to recently had literally, you serve an hors d'oeuvre to a guest when you're coming to a more formal place a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Their hors d'oeuvre was to just put plates of sliced culatello on the table.
That seems like a really good idea.
And it was a really fancy garnish. There was bread.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, this stuff is so amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's usually, you know, 24 to 36 months.
Okay.
They had up to 72 month culatello, you know, like Grand Reserve is.
Sure.
At this particular restaurant, Al Cavallo Blanco. It's a restaurant near Parma. It's a little one-star Michelin that is pretty
really
fabulous.
Great.
It's definitely, if you're in that region, that's a place to get to.
That was one of my favorite things about going to Spain was, you know, when we went on a work trip and we get there.
Oh, the Jamón Ibérico tour.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I mean, that and the Padrón peppers.
Well,
because I'd never had the Padrón before.
What do I eat in Spain? I eat Jamón Ibérico and seafood.
Yes, right. Okay.
Let's go to Jane in Baltimore. Jane, how are you?
Hi, Jane.
Hi. My name is Jane. I am originally from Chatsford, Pennsylvania, and went to school in Kennett Square, which is the mushroom capital of the world.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And as you may or may not know, Kennett Square is culturally Italian. And a lot of the mushroom growers are Italian. And my mother would call recipes from the Italian women in Kennett Square. And one of my favorite recipes that people get on a list for Christmas is pickled mushrooms. And I get the simple button mushrooms, small button mushrooms, and parboil them for a minute with some simple white vinegar, a little bit of oil, fresh oregano, kosher salt, and jar them and give them out, and they are to die for.
Do you leave the mushrooms whole, or do you slice them or quarter them?
I leave them whole because they're small.
Okay.
I guess I like the small button.
Me too.
They shrink after they're in the jar, mm-hmm. So they're like candy. You just pop them in your mouth and eat a whole jar.
Oh, that sounds good. That sounds great. Good for you.
I'll tell you what, I'm just talking about culatello, Jane. It would be great to have pickled mushrooms as a garnish for prosciutto or culatello or that sort of Italian salumi.
Thank you, Jane.
Thanks for the call. When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll have more of your calls. If you're on hold, please stay on the line. Or you can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us formulawolf@wypr.org. Welcome back to Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. We're talking about the market. We're talking about the best stuff you ever ate, or it's so far the best stuff I ever ate.
we want to hear from you all.
You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. And we have an email here from Kate in Baltimore County. How do you apply food trend forecasting to your work? Which is an interesting question.
Uh-huh. I don't.
No, I mean, that's...
See, that's for me, I don't. I don't think... my inspiration for what I do...
Well, you work is internal. I mean, that's...
Yeah, it is internal.
You,
go ahead.
Your cuisine is personal and your work is internal, and that's one of the things that makes it special. I mean, I think one of the things over the years, I mean, like over the arc of... And I think that we both always work that way. Like I see something and I want to cook it.
Right.
You know, or I see something and I want to share it, or I taste something and I want to share, you know. That,
exactly.
That being said, over the years, you become aware and you become sensitive to the way that people are responding to things. You know, it's a dynamic process. I mean, frankly, now versus 20 years ago, you're a whole lot better vegetable cook than you were.
Sure. I'm a whole lot better cook at everything that I do versus 20 years ago. But the thing too, well, I mean, that's, you know, when you just, the more you do something, the better you get. But the thing too is that the product is better than it used to be as well. And what's available, there's more available than there used to be. I mean, to me, that's what I have seen change over my 35 years of cooking professionally is what's available and how available it is. Because I know one of the issues now is flying food to us and, you know, how not good that is for the environment, which of course it isn't. But it's like, oh gosh, so does that mean I can't work with Turbo or Bronzino or all these things that I love to work with from Europe now? You know, and I mean, I get it. So it's, you know, there are definitely decisions that we have to make. It's a little bit like not using plastic straws and plastic stirrers and anything that we can do to try and be environmentally sound. But yeah, when it comes to, for me, I'm inspired by the product. I am inspired by all these experiences. You know, you were talking about what might be our favorite meals. I mean, the reason that I have traveled to Europe as much as I have over the last 20 years is because that has been what I call my continuing education. I've been an executive chef since I was 25 years old. I'm 55. So I have had to learn from myself for the last 30 years. Frankly, I've learned a lot of things from you as well. But my inspiration is really what's in market, what a purveyor is excited about and can bring to me, but predominantly it's my own reading and my own traveling and the trips that we have been on with our staff.
Well, we'll just have conversations about, we have such and such. What do you want to do? Well, maybe that's the idea. And then maybe you sleep on it and you twist it a different way. And that's also,
for me, a lot of my ideas come from the quiet time, which is when you're going to sleep and it's dark and, you know, I was thinking about it today. I actually live a life of food. My life, I don't have children. I'm not married. My life is all about my work. And that is pretty much all I really think about. And that's kind of crazy.
Get ideas in the dark.
I do, of food.
Let's go to Bill in Reisterstown.
Tony's not going to let me finish talking. Okay, hi, Bill.
No, but Bill's been on hold for a little bit. Hey,
what's going on, Bill?
I'm doing great. Thanks a lot. I love listening to your show. I have called in one time before. It was an infamous call. I'm the person who called in and told you guys about the shake and bake spam that I made in college.
You know, I don't
remember.
I don't know if infamous is the right term, but it was a memorable call, Bill.
Okay, Bill, what's going on this time?
Well, don't worry. I'm not calling to say that shake and bake spam was the best thing that I ever ate.
Different times we have different needs, Bill.
So what I'm calling about is I love mushrooms. All different kinds. I have not had a lot of experience with some of the more with things outside of the more mundane mushrooms, but I just love mushrooms. Last year I was exploring, and I happened upon what I thought was chicken of the woods. And before I was able to confirm it and go back to it, it had already aged out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, where are some places to go where I can buy chicken of the woods, and what kind of recipes really lend itself to it?
One, just to start with, local product. As dry as it is right now, you're not going to find as much as you would in some years, that's for sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Going into fall, usually by now we've started to have a couple pretty good rains.
It's unbelievably dry this season.
And so that's making for a lot of other good product. But, you know, in the winter, especially if winter is not unbelievably cold and we get some wet part of the season, we're going to see some stuff. My guess is that the spring, because, you know, the nature cycles, the spring will end up being pretty wet. And if that's the case, you're going to see a lot of stuff come April, May, June. But you're getting plenty of things from outside of the region that are...
Yeah, I'm getting chanterelles from the West Coast right now, and we get what's called buttons, which are the little tiny ones that are tight-capped, and oh my gosh, I mean, their flavor is incredible. But what I can tell you in general about working with mushrooms is that they grow when it's wet. They have a high water content, and you need whichever one it is you're working with, and you know, you said mundane. I love button mushrooms. It doesn't have to be an exotic mushroom. I love working with mushrooms and all of them. And if you when you go to saute them or roast them, you just want to, first of all, you have to clean them. And that one of the challenges of working with mushrooms is that the water is the enemy. So therefore, when you go to wash them, you need to do it relatively quickly. Unless it's something like a wild mushroom, like a chanterelle, that unfortunately you're going to have to let soak in a sink full of water because you've got pine needles and sand and dirt from the environment that they grew in because they're not cultivated. And you've got to get that out of there or they're inedible. And often their stems are very, very dirty. So you really have to clean them, and oftentimes you just have to cut the stem, the end of the stem off. But once they're clean, you need to drain them well. And then if you have actually had to wash your mushrooms like that in a sink full of water, the best thing to do is to pop them on a sheet pan or whatever you have and roast them in the oven at 350 degrees with the convection on if you have that opportunity to dry them out, and then begin to add...
Not dry them for a long time.
No, just like five minutes, six, seven. Well, you'll see what happens. The water will start to pool in that pan. So you need our sheet pans, what we call a sheet pan is like a cookie sheet, but it has sides. And so you need something with sides so that the water is captured. But as you'll see the water start to come out, and as the water comes out, then it'll start to evaporate. And then once it really starts to evaporate, that's when you can then pull those back out of the oven, toss them in a bowl with butter, fresh rosemary, fresh thyme, or none of the above, just butter or oil if you prefer. But just remember, they're going to absorb whatever it is that you are cooking them in. So I honestly suggest butter and salt. And I often don't even put pepper on mushrooms. But yeah, put them back in. And you want to get them to the point where they begin to brown, begin to caramelize. And that's when you will realize the best flavor of those mushrooms. So even if you're just eating them like that, there are about 1,000,000,000 things you can do with mushrooms. But even if you're just eating them like that, which really allows you to enjoy the mushroom, that's how you handle them.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. I love mushrooms.
I understand. Me too.
They had mushrooms at market today, by the way, as well. So
I know.
I don't think any of those are wild, though. Those are all cultivated. Okay, all right.
let's... Let me pull up this email from Margie in Annapolis. Chef, can you share a tempura recipe?
Oh, boy. You know what, Margie? I love tempura, and I do not have quantities. We just make it. Sparkling water, cake flour, baking soda, baking powder, salt. And then with our batter, we put...
a lot more flour than... soda or
of course
powder.
Yeah, unfortunately I can't tell you the quantities.
It's a tiny little bit of both of those.
You can kind of fool around with it a little bit. You know, I want to say maybe a small teaspoon, a teaspoon of baking soda, baking powder, and then, you know, say, I hate to tell you this, maybe 4 cups of flour, a little bit of the sparkling water to bring it together, but you're going to have to fool around with it. But what we also do is we put lemon and lime zests in our tempura batter, which I love because we're often doing seafood. So if you are doing seafood, even if it's a vegetable, it often lends itself very nicely to the tempura batter.
Some of the vegetables right now, the eggplant, the zucchini,
oh my gosh,
the peppers, that's a great frito misto right there.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I love tempura. Mm.
So best thing you ever ate. Let's hear it.
My gosh.
That doesn't mean fanciest thing you ever ate.
I know.
It doesn't mean the homiest thing you ever ate. Just best thing. Boom.
It's very hard for me to answer, but I mean, I have so many things that I've had, but I will talk about something that is unusual, which is tête de veau, which means head of veal. And it's made by Michel.
Now you're speaking my language.
Yeah, I know. You like things like this. Michel Gerard is a 3-star Michelin chef. His restaurant is just south of Bordeaux in a town called Eugène-les-Bains, and he and his wife, who unfortunately recently passed away, do have a spa. They really have, it's a very small village. They sort of have the whole village for their hotel. It's a lovely, lovely, lovely place. Grounds are amazing. But he has it's a farm restaurant on property as well as his 3-star. He has several restaurants on property. It's Les Fermes aux Grives is the restaurant where it's a gorgeous old barn.
That's a very, very,
it's so special.
Les Fermes aux Grives is a very good way to get 3-star quality cooking at a, like any restaurant that's considered a good restaurant in the States sort of price.
Yeah,
which is very hard to do. There are a lot of 2-star and 3-star chefs that have what's, you know, supposed to be their casual knockoff, and it's super fussy and it's not that satisfying, and it's not a value of any kind. That's one of the better values, I think.
It's also one of my very favorite restaurants I've ever been to.
It's a beautiful place to eat outside.
Oh my gosh, everything about it is just, you feel the old world of France there. And they do suckling pigs or pigs on the spit in this gigantic fireplace. That's also incredible. But the tête de veau is a very old world dish where you use all the parts of the head of the veal calf to make a forcemeat or terrine. And theirs is the best I have ever eaten. And there's not anything scary about it. It doesn't have things that you don't want to feel in your mouth. It doesn't taste weird. It's just absolutely delicious and almost has a natural sweet tone to it. And it's super clean tasting and it's flavorful and it's not rich.
There's definitely cognac in there for us.
Oh my gosh. It's just incredible. And then the accompanying mayonnaise is just, Ravi Goat is just perfect. But he's in his 80s and he is such a classically trained, back in the day when, you know, you didn't stray from what was classic in a dish ever. You learned how to make things exactly the way it's defined. Yeah. And in French cooking and classic French cooking, which is, I mean, that's a heck of a background, a heck of an education that he has had working hard all of his life. And
yeah, he's definitely one of the strongest of that whole generation.
He is.
That came up through the Nouvelle Cuisine time.
He is my favorite chef in the world where I've ever eaten. And I love Guy Julien, La Beaugraviere, but Michel Garrard is in a class, and he is just, and I admire him and respect him so much at his age, walking through the dining room. When you're there, you see him on property, and, you know, he's an incredible person and a kind man. Really respect him. So that's my favorite, one of my favorite dishes. Of many, quite frankly.
I mean, and the 3-star, the restaurant is beautiful.
Oh my gosh.
And the cellar is great and all that.
Oof.
But honestly, I liked sitting in the more simple restaurant in many ways.
I love that restaurant. I agree with
more,
you.
Just because it's sort of inside,
it's
outside.
It's hard for me to say more, but I love them. I love them both. They really are incredible.
Well,
go there if you possibly can. Make it a goal. It's worth it.
Yeah. That's it.
And you just have to fly from Bordeaux to Pau.
Well, I think that's Bordeaux to Pau. I think that's all we have time for.
Okay.
If you want to listen to this program again, you don't have to, but you can find this or any one of our other programs on the WYPR website, wypr.org. Look for the Foreman Wolf page, and you can find a full menu of programs there. You can email us if you have any correspondence for us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. If we did not get to your call, sorry about that. We'd love to talk to you next week.
Yes.
If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Facebook as Cindy Wolf, on Instagram as Chef Wolf, and on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf.
Instagram for me is The Real Tony Foreman, and yes, I'm lame. I don't post that often. Anyway, thanks so much for listening.
Happy Sunday.